The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRV Radio, its management, or its staff. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Don Sowa. Taking care of business and working overtime. Market insights and so much more. Talk to Don now, 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Sowa on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Well, folks, for anybody who might have believed that there's been a decoupling between the price of oil and the direction of the stock market, today and perhaps the last several weeks have been a good example of how wrong we can be. Stocks did close more than 1% higher today, building on their best weekly gain for 2016. Why? Well, because oil prices were climbing. The Dow briefly gained more than 250 points, temporarily topping its 50-day moving average as shares of United Technologies and others spiked more than 6.5%. Following a CNBC report that the Dow component and Honeywell actually held merger talks recently, the blue chips closed not at 250, but at 228, not bad. And the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ indexes gained nearly 1.5% each. WTI futures for oil, for March delivery, which expired after the settle Monday, ended up about $1.84 or 6.21%, closing around $31.48 per barrel. The April contract settled at about $1.64 up, closing in around $33.39 a barrel. The International Energy Agency said that in its medium-term outlook that the U.S. shale oil production was expected to fall by about 600,000 barrels per day. That's this year, and another maybe 200,000 barrels per day next year in 2017. So the forecast added to last week's drop in oil rig count to their lowest level since December of 2009, all added together to put pressure on the price of oil, at least to the upside. Perhaps today's report would offer investors a little more comfort that the worst may be behind them in the oil sector. Certainly the U.S., is the swing producer, and seeing the big rig count fall certainly leads to this belief that production is going to continue to fall. OPEC Secretary General Abdallah Salim al-Badri, gotta love it, huh? This just runs right off my tongue, it's like Scottish, said at the SCERA Week Energy Conference in Houston that OPEC is willing to work with non-OPEC producers to find a solution for oil price producers that are out there. Last week, Saudi Arabia and Russia agreed to a production freeze, at least, right around the January levels. But, of course, that's dependent upon oil, other producers participating at an equal level. So, again, too many things could happen along the way. I'm not saying that it won't happen. I'm just saying that there's a lot of show me stuff if you're from Missouri. Also, helping U.S. stocks was further stabilization in China, where the yuan currency held steady overnight, and the Shanghai composite jumping more than 2% to lead gains in Asian equities. European stocks closed more than 1.5% higher. Anytime we get a stable night, I guess, in China, that leads to some calmness the following day in Europe. And calmness in those two markets helps an awful lot here in the U.S., given just the nature of the markets and the way the markets have been anticipating these things. Over the weekend, China's official Xinhua news agency said that Zhao Gang, who's the chairman of the China Securities Regulatory Commission, had been succeeded by Louis Xiyu, who's the chairman of the Agricultural Bank of China and a former deputy governor of their central bank in China. Among the top S&P advancers was materials, led by 12% gains in Freeport-McMoRan and Alcoa, as copper and other industrial metals moved higher. The Dane Davis, who commodities research analyst over at Barclays, he attributed much of the rise in copper to a correlation with oil prices. So oil's pushing not just dollars in equities, but also other commodities as well. It's become particularly strong over the last couple of weeks, this correlation. The lift in crude oil above the $30 mark has resulted in a bullish sentiment anyway, and that bullish sentiment has lifted copper along with it. I think that's what's more encouraging is if you see the commodity complex itself surging, that, you know, that would be driven by a better impression of the global economy normally, according to Art Hogan, who's with the chief market strategist at Wunderlich Securities. The U.S., you know, economic news in U.S., you know, the flash read on market manufacturing PMI, you know, for the month of February anyway, was around 51. Down from the final January print of 52.4 and hitting its lowest level since October of 2012, possibly. But Treasury yields did hold higher, with the two-year yield at 0.76 and the 10-year yield at 1.76. The U.S. dollar index traded about 0.8% higher. The euro was near $1.10, its lowest that we've seen against the dollar in nearly 3 weeks, and the yen at around 112.87 yen against the greenback. Now, pound sterling held a touch above session lows. Earlier, sterling fell below $1.41. To its lowest level in nearly 7 years after popular London Mayor Boris Johnson said that he would campaign for Britain to leave the European Union ahead of a June 23rd referendum. Now, on Friday, the major U.S. averages ended the week up about 2.5% or more, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500, you know, posting their best week since the one ending November the 20th. Now, NASDAQ Composite outperformed, up nearly 4% for the week. It's the best week that we've seen since the end of July the 17th, the week ending the 17th. Now, the CBOE Volatility Index, which is the VIX we talk about once in a while, widely considered one of the better gauges of volatility or angst or fear in the market overall. It fell below 20 to its lowest level since December 31st. And, again, the number itself is not significant. It's really the direction the number goes that really matters, and the direction has been down lately. So that suggests there's less volatility, less concerns about risk in the market right now. About four stocks advanced for every decliner, you know, on the New York Stock Exchange. All good news, ultimately. Gold futures for the month of April delivery settled $20 lower, but still above $1,200, right around $1,210 an ounce. Numbers are solid. I mean, you're still looking at gold up probably about 12 to 15% so far year to date. One of the few years we've seen that kind of really positive movement in gold in general. Gives you some idea of some of the things that you have to look at as you're struggling, frankly, to determine, you know, what the real direction of markets are, what the direction should be or could be, and frankly, you know, how do you make decisions with your money? I mean, we've been looking pretty broadly at the types of decisions folks are trying to make related to retirement planning. They're looking, and I guess right now the biggest factor for you is whatever your plan is currently, if you have one. If you don't have one, start right now. This is the time to start really looking closely at what your options should be. And if you don't have a plan thoughtfully, if you're really insecure about where to put your money, then look at your debts. Look at your cash flow. If you're not comfortable saving right now, if you're unhappy with the rates you can get at the bank, and if you certainly are uncomfortable, even though I would argue against this part of the strategy, but if you're uncomfortable investing money in the market, whether it's through individual stocks or mutual funds or ETFs, then, you know, go to the other side of financial planning. Pay down your debts. Get as flush with the bank as you possibly can, as flush with the house, so to speak, as you can. Eliminate the expensive credit cards. Pay down your mortgage to the degree that you're able to. Overall, if you have a car payment, get out from underneath it. As markets do emerge, there's going to come a point in time where you're going to feel better about being an investor. But it would be nice to have some surplus, stable, ongoing cash flow that you've freed up because you've eliminated debt service that was related to some of the more expensive debt you've been carrying. So you've been deleveraging. Corporations have done it. American public's been doing it the last couple of years with cheap oil, gas prices. So if you're not comfortable being a saver or investor in this market, okay, that's fine. I don't necessarily encourage that mindset. There's a lot of reasons to start saving and investing here if you haven't already. But if you're still in that place, that difficult spot, well, then take the opportunity to pay down your risk, to pay down your debt service, so that when things do turn and you start to feel a little bit more comfortable with the idea of saving some money and investing some money, you'll have the cash flow to do it with, and you could dollar cost average into a number of different strategies. And we could talk about them right here on the Money Talk program. I'm Don Soa. This is AM 790, your home of talk and business. 437-5000, that's our local number. Toll free, we're at 888-345-0790. And guess who's here? Yep, Crystal's here. Better believe it. Yep, I know. Everybody's excited on this floor here up at the Wampanoag Trail. We hope you're excited, too. I'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Don Soa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to the Money Talk program. I'm Don Soa, delighted to have you sharing your drive time home with me. How can you tell if you're actually ready to retire? You know, here we are in southern New England. We have a really large, well, either pre-retirement or already retired community here. Our demographics favor, you know, the golden years, or those at least approaching them. It's funny, I tend to gravitate towards articles, you know, in various journals, whether it's regular magazines, financial magazines, online services. The ones that talk about or lean towards the psychology that goes into this process of retirement. I was reading an article in the U.S. News and World Report, and I really got a kick out of some elements of it. In this one particular case, they start out with a gentleman who said that he retired when he was in his mid-50s, and it was, of course, the day that his boss walked into the office and handed him over the dreaded manila envelope and told me to clear out my workspace by the end of the week. Fortunately, he knew that it was coming because there was no secret that the company was facing hard times. And so he basically had some time to prepare, I suppose. But it's a terrible and difficult thing to reduce down to a matter of days or even weeks. Decisions that really represent the culmination of many, 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 many years or a lifetime of work, sometimes with the same company or with similar companies. But suppose you're lucky enough to actually choose the timing of your actual retirement. How do you know? How do you know you're ready and that it's really finally time to take the leap? And it's a big deal. We know for – I know having dealt with this question so many times with so many prospective or existing clients that it's a much tougher decision, and it goes beyond just the money. I absolutely promise you it does. How do you know when you're ready? How do you know when it's finally time? You're probably thinking in terms of the dollars. I get it. Can you afford to retire? Now, that's important. I don't deny that for a second. If you know that you can financially afford the challenges that come with retirement because of your cash flow, whether it's maybe you get some Social Security, maybe you have a defined benefit pension, or maybe you put away a lot of money in some sort of a 403B or a 401K plan. If you have some or all of those things working for you, it's nice to take the financial decision off the table and reduce the overall decision just to the other psychological or more emotional things that we deal with. But there are a bunch of questions that you have to answer before you actually enter retirement. And honestly, some of it is as basic as, well, you know, when I retire, what am I going to do? I mean, I'm going to suddenly have a lot of time on my hands. What do I do with my time? I mean, that's the one thing that you get back. You know, the job, the workforce, the company you work for, whatever they are, they did take something from you. Maybe they're giving you a paycheck. We like that. I mean, you're going to, you know, obviously very important. But your company is ultimately for you a source of a money machine. They give you a money machine, and they're giving you, and believe me, it's not a gift, it's a loan. They're loaning you this money machine, and they're going to let you use it over the next however many years, and in turn, what you give them in back is goods, a certain level of service. You are going to provide certain services to your company in lieu of the use of this money machine. Now, you're going to take the proceeds of that money machine every other week or however it is you get paid, and you're going to draw out what you live on. So the money machine builds and supports the lifestyle that you're hopefully going to choose or that you've already chosen or that you'd like to choose. And you're also, very, very importantly, and this is the thing we stress out here on Money Talk, you're going to start out, or at least have the opportunity to start building your own money machine. Not one you have to give back eventually. Someday the boss comes in and says, okay, we're done. You know, the services you're providing, we're now going to get it more cheaply from somebody else. I know. Madam Crystal's shaking her head. She says, well, we've seen this one before. This is no big surprise. But the, you know, and it does happen. Sometimes it's the right time for you. Sometimes, you know, the service you've provided may be very, very valuable. But the truth is, after all these years, you've gotten so many of the normal raises, it's possible that your hour of work is just maybe too expensive for the company to tolerate anymore. They have to be efficient with the way they do things. Otherwise, they may have to raise the cost of the product or the service that they're providing if payroll has become a little bit out of hand. So companies go through a purging cycle, shall we say, where they look at some of the most expensive elements of their payroll, might be you, and say, okay, we can do the same work, the same job, and do it in a less expensive fashion with perhaps a younger, newer person that simply hasn't built up all those massive payroll credits that you have. So hopefully, if it's the right time for you, then you have to deal with other issues. But the biggest difference between working and being retired is that you no longer get up in the morning at the same time. You no longer get dressed exactly the same way necessarily. And you don't go to work that 5 or 6 days a week, however many you do. You had a ritual, didn't you? You had a routine. Everybody gets up. They do the same thing. I mean, it's amazing. I talk to people. They say, you know something? I get out of bed on exactly the same side of the bed. I put my feet down on the floor. I actually make the bed first before I do anything else. I make the bed before I go into the bathroom. Then I go into the bathroom and use the bathroom for what it's meant for. But then as a ritual, then I either, if it's a guy, he might say, well, then I get up and shave and brush my teeth and then take a shower. I mean, there's a whole, but the thing is, it's a ritual. People, after decades, they don't defer from the process. It's a process. And some of them who are efficient actually have laid their clothes out the night before. Or if they didn't, they have a ritual or routine by which where to go and find the clothes in the morning when they actually get up. But anyway, you do have a routine. It's hard to get out of these routines. Now you have to fill all of that time that used to belong to the company, part of the money machine deal, fill that time, your own structure your own day, where before your day was pretty solidly structured. You know, after many, many, many years of structure, it's hard to break away from that structure. I had some guy tell me that he used to get up at the same, like, 5 o'clock in the morning, go through this whole ritual, drive out, drive into his favorite donut shop, go through the drive-thru, get his coffee and his muffin, and then go to his office or wherever, sit at the desk, turn on the radio, listen to Salty Brine, hopefully, at that time years ago, and sit there, eat his muffin, drink his coffee, and then plan out the day. That was his ritual. Then he retired. So what does he do? He gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning, still gets dressed up. He still drives to his favorite donut shop. He goes through the line, gets his coffee, gets his muffin, pulls out into the parking lot. He goes, oh, no, what am I going to do now? I don't have any place to go. So he drives home. But now he sits at the kitchen table, turns on the Today Show or whatever the morning thing is that early, and he sits there and waits the next 2 hours until his wife wakes up because she tends to be a little bit more of a sleep-in person. Well, by comparison, getting up at 7 o'clock versus 5 is not so bad. It's such a big deal. But he used to go through that ritual. He said, you know, I can't really do it any other way. I said, why don't you change your routine? He says, because it's who I am. It's part of the girls over at the donut shop expect to see me drive through. If I were to go for 3 or 4 days without driving through, everybody gets worried. They might even call the police. He says, I don't understand it. Joe didn't come by today. But it's, again, everybody gets into the concept, the process of the ritual. It's easy if you have passion for something outside of your job. If you're good at your job, if you love the people you work with, if it pays you properly, and if you're appreciated, you know, you love to get up and go to work. If you're not going to do that anymore for one reason or another, I hope you have something else that you feel good about, something else that you're passionate about, something that you can do with other people that you like being around. That's, you know, it's all really, really important. Maybe you play in a band. Maybe you're a musical person. Maybe you like to teach. You know, maybe you'll teach your grandkids if you're old enough. Teach them how to play the piano or the guitar. You know, again, you have to have some passion. Maybe it's time to do some writing. Maybe you know, who knows? I don't know if you want to write your memoirs, but maybe you get out there and walk the golf course once in a while. Start hitting that ball. Who knows? Maybe even get it in the little hole over there at the end where the flag is. If you don't have an inborn passion, then you need to actually recognize that retirement is probably a new stage in life. It's a new stage in life, and you probably want something to do with all of this wonderful time you've now acquired, especially if you're retiring earlier than you might have normally planned. Some people take on a part-time job if they're in their 50s, if they haven't quite made it into the 60s yet. That's probably important because you're also in your 50s not eligible for Social Security if you're going to get it. I mean, not even getting it early at age 62, and that's a different conversation. But you might want to work, not because necessarily you need the money, but maybe you do. Maybe you do want some stable cash flow. Maybe in your 50s you'd still like the ability, maybe it's a necessity, to continue saving money. If you have a part-time job, you could continue to fund an IRA of some sort. Maybe you're not in an income level where you need the deduction, so this is a great time to fund a Roth. Between you and your spouse, your partner, you know, you could put away, you know, $6,500 for a person, maybe $12,000-$13,000 as a couple. If you, in fact, earn that much money, knock yourself out. Go ahead and do it. Put the money away. It's a wonderful thing to be saving, whether you need to or not. But it's great to be saving in a Roth where the money's going to go in. It's going to be tax sheltered. And when you take the money out, it comes out tax free. Not a bad way to go. And you can invest it pretty much any way you want. So ask yourself what you really like to do, what engages your interest, and realize that, you know, finally, here's your chance to do it. You couldn't do it before, but now you've got the time. Folks, we're talking about retiring maybe even before you expected to. The question is, are you ready? I'm Don Sowa. This is Money Talk. We'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Okay, folks, we're talking about the possibility of retiring, maybe earlier than you expected. Maybe by design, maybe an opportunity has been created that lets you do this. But maybe, you know, the job suddenly disappears. I mean, there are people who suddenly find themselves in their mid-50s who ideally would have anticipated working into their mid-60s. Now, what that does is it means that you've lost that extra time. Time being, as anyone who listens to this show knows, we talk about that as being one of the most important elements of successful long-term investing. The question will be is, if you are looking potentially at some version of an early retirement, are you ready to pass up more money in favor of more freedom? Remember, one thing about retirement is that you get your time back. You get a lot more freedom. There's things that how many times have you said something? Well, you know, I always wanted to do this or I always wanted to do that, but I never really had the time to do it. I mean, we were raising a family. I had to go to work every day. In the early years of my business, especially if you own your own business, you were working 50, 60, 70 hours a week. Or if you work as a producer at a radio station, you know what that's all about. I mean, crazy hours. You know, Crystal, she has a little cart over there in the corner with a pillow. She never leaves. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But, you know, she's one of those people who just loves her work. I mean, unbelievable. In all likelihood, you will probably have a little bit less income in retirement, especially if you're looking to retire earlier or if you're forced to retire earlier. But so you know you're ready to retire, and this is really the question we're asking today is, do you know when you're ready? When you reach the stage in life when you're happy to live on maybe a little bit less in order to live where you want to live, live the way you want to live with the people that you want to live with. In other words, wealth is not about the money. Wealth is about choices. Being able to make the choices, and by the way, very importantly, not have your decisions dictated to you. By who? Well, by other people, certainly, or maybe by your circumstances. Sometimes it's a circumstance that dictates what you're going to do, the way you want to do it. Experts say that you need about 80% of your working income, in other words, how much you were earning when you were working, to retire comfortably. Well, that assumes that you're living comfortably while you're working, I guess. But many people retire on less than that because their desire for free time outweighs their need for more material goods or their impulse to keep up with the Joneses. Maybe the value of being able to take a walk in the middle of a beautiful day or just to take a, you know, let's jump on the car, honey, and let's take a ride somewhere. Let's go down to the beach. Let's just the ability to do things. That's something that you get back. A friend of mine once said, one thing you get back when you're retired, obviously this is a sexist remark, he's talking to the guys. He's saying, the one thing you get back when you retire is your girlfriend. Don't you remember that pretty little girl across the way you wanted to ask her to dance, but you were nervous at the mixer? I don't know whether they still do those anymore, but when I was a young guy at LaSalle Academy, Friday night mixers, God, I mean, we all look forward to that. But it was amazing how one side of the room is all the pretty girls, and then on the other side of the room are all the pretty guys. There are all the guys standing around trying to be cool. But, you know, and I used to say to myself, we had this one guy in the class. He wasn't the best looking. I actually even thought he was a little bit of dorky a little bit sometimes. But for whatever reason, every time he'd come to a prom or a major dance where he had to bring a date, he had the best-looking, most beautiful girl in the room. And one time, I don't know what it was that came over me, but I finally said, okay, what's the secret? There's something going on here. What are you paying these girls to come to the dance with you? I don't know. And he says, you know, you're going to be really, he says, if I tell you, I'll tell you, he goes, but you're going to be really upset when I tell you why. I said, no, I won't. I promise I won't be upset. Tell me. I got to know. He says, they can only say no. You ask them. You ask them out. He said, if I ask enough beautiful girls out, I will end up on a date, at any dance, at any event, with a beautiful girl. Sooner or later, one of them's going to say yes. And by the way, they may say yes for any number of different reasons. Maybe she's never been to that location. Maybe it's an event she's always wanted to go to. There's any number of reasons. And by the way, if you do it, it's not an insult to me, he'd say. He said, because she doesn't know me. If she would normally have said no, she's not saying no because, you know, it's because she doesn't know me. Who knows? Maybe by giving her a reason to say yes, I'm going to give her the opportunity to get to know me, or give me the opportunity to make the good impression that I would want to make. I'll never get to make the impression because those guys like me would think, oh, gee, you know, girls like that don't talk to people like me. They only go out with the college guys, all the really pretty. Well, I learned later on, I talked to some of the girls that I knew from high school. And later, in the years later on, they used to say, you know, I didn't go to my junior prom because nobody asked me to. I go to the dances and I stand all day with my girlfriends because nobody asks me to dance. And I said, well, most of the guys just thought you were probably dating some college guy. And then she got really mad. Why didn't somebody just ask? Well, because this may not sound like a particularly interesting topic for Money Talk program, you know, here on a Monday night. But the bottom line is, it's all about asking anything. Success in life. People have asked me, how did you get Peter Lynch, probably the guru of mutual fund investing from Fidelity Investments, back in 1991, to do your radio show? We were brand new on the air here. Money Talk was brand new. And he was like the god of mutual fund investing. And somebody says, how did you get him to be on the show? I said, I asked. I said, what's worse? I mean, if the guy said no, I said, okay, I got blown off by Peter Lynch. Peter Lynch said no. So what? I'd assume that Peter was saying no to everybody else too. But it turned out he said yes. He came on down, did the show, was promoting his new book. It was great. It was a great night. I got to meet one of my heroes. You know, it was one of the best nights. And it was pretty much the launch of the Money Talk program back in 1991. I mean, we got a lot of really positive, interesting, and important attention. And people started listening to the show. They started to figure, you know, maybe if we listen to that show, we're going to hear some really, really important stuff. And for 25 years, we've been trying to share with you as much really, really important stuff as we possibly can. Topics related to retirement are unique to the Money Talk program the last several years. Why? Because we are all older. This program is 25 years old, or 25 years young, whichever way you want to look to it. My daughter Donna, who is just about to come off maternity leave, so we'll be seeing her back on the air again on Tuesdays, she would tell you that it's 25 years young because she's now part of the Money Talk family and will hopefully be for quite some time. But, you know, a lot of experts say that you need about 80% to work to live comfortably. I'm not buying that. The 80% rule means if you want to have, because we live on our take-home pay. We don't live on our gross pay. When you retire, what changes? Well, your payroll is not taxed the same way as your portfolio. Your portfolio is your investments. It may be other things. You don't have FICA coming out. You're not paying Social Security retirement, Medicaid, Medicare coming out of your investments from your 401k or 403b, or you're not paying those taxes on your pension plan if you're lucky enough to have one. You're not paying the same tax level on Social Security if you're eligible for it. So you're not making contributions to a 401k plan, or you're not paying fees or dues into a union plan. You're not paying for temporary disability insurance. All the things that you had coming out of your weekly or biweekly paycheck before you got to spend it as take-home pay, that stuff stops. That's a portfolio income calculation. I mean, that's payroll calculation. Portfolio is dramatically different. So the difference is at least 80% in many cases. You say, well, how much the take-home pay, in other words, from once you retire on 80% of the money, that you would have been earning when you were working, the take-home pay is the same. So they're not really saying you're living on less money. So the next side of the discussion would be for the people who can live on less is, do you need to be spending money on all the things that you were spending money on while you were still working? Once you retire, will your lifestyle change? Will your spending habits change? The way you do things, the way you travel, the way will it change? Even the way you dress may change because you may not have to. If you're a person that puts on a suit every day to go to work, guess what? Your wardrobe expense is going to change. You know, many people, they retire on less because their desire for free time is more important. You're not competing also with the guy next door. They just want time to enjoy retirement, and they're willing to adapt their lifestyle to the resources that they have with them, the resources that they already have. Now, among the issues that are pretty important, I think, and I've seen it myself even though I'm not retired, but I'm in my 60s, is this opportunity and the desire to spend more time with your family. I mean, I just love, I mean, I get up in the morning and my son, who is a director of operations in my firm, he stops off at the house, and what does he do? He drops off his son, my grandson, Thomas, little Thomas Bombas, drops him off at the house. And, you know, I may get, sometimes when I'm lucky, I get a couple of minutes before I leave the house, and we'll peel a banana, and we'll play with his oatmeal or whatever it's doing and make silly faces. And of course, little children turn full-grown adults into blithering idiots. It's just amazing. The stupid faces, silly sounds you'll make, and it's just great. And I'll tell you something. It starts off my day, no matter what I'm looking forward to. It's, you know, I may not have been looking forward to leaving the house on some days, but if you can get up and see your grandkids, it's a real joy, and I've been blessed with that. I mean, my eldest grandson is Connor, and, of course, we now go to all of his basketball games, so he's not a baby anymore. But he's given us a lot of fun and excitement. His little sister Grace is 4, and she's hysterical. And of course, she loves little Thomas Bombas, as we call him, which is Danny's little guy. And Danny's little guy, he's a little over, about 8 months, a little over that now. And he's just, the thing about him is, he looks like Danny did when he was baby. I mean, blonde hair, big blue eyes. I mean, it's reminiscent to taking his crystal back to a simpler time. And I think that it's almost a cliche, but for many people it's really, really true, especially when it comes to grandchildren. According to a study by Fidelity Investments themselves and Stanford's Center on Longevity, Stanford University, over 60% of retirees cite spending more time with their grandchildren as a major reason for actually wanting to retire. But be careful. According to the same study, spouses often have a different view about spending time together. Some 60% of husbands say they want to spend more time with their wives, while barely 40% of women want to spend more time with their husbands. Wait a minute. I got to call these people up over there at Fidelity and find out. I don't know who are they talking to. I just don't understand this. I don't know, folks. I'm Don Sowa. That's who I am anyway. This is AM790. You're listening to Money Talk. We're talking about retirement. Is retiring early the right thing for you to do? Are you ready? Which is the big question. Are you actually ready to retire? And those are the questions we're asking tonight. We'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM790 Talk and Business.
And we're back with the last segment of tonight's Money Talk program. I'm Don Sowa. Delighted to have you here with us. Talking about that, a very important question, and as it relates, I mean, a lot of the other questions we've done here on Money Talk have related to, well, you know, are you ready to retire when you get to retirement age, or the things you need to be doing in order to make sure you can be independent when you retire? What about on those occasions when you're thinking about or maybe being maneuvered into a decision about retiring early? The big question is, are you ready? We've sort of tonight been pulling back the layers of the onion a little bit and actually addressing the kind of questions you need to be asking. Now, a lot of the previous questions have had to do with your attitude. You know, how do you feel about this? How do you feel about that? But we do have to actually get real. There's some realistic questions that really plague a great many people. I hate to use the word plague as part of the same discussion, but it's health issues. Are you, they're very personal. Some people with a chronic disease or a family history of heart disease, for example, may want to, you know, maybe take early retirement to enjoy life to its fullest while you can, if you're concerned about your longevity, or enjoy it to its fullest while you are physically healthy enough. I mean, you may live a while, but you know, living later on when you're on it with a walker or in a wheelchair, or, you know, you see people everywhere around you struggling to maintain their independence with mechanical assistance. And some people simply say, it's a quality of life question. Some people out there will simply hold on to a job to keep their health insurance in place. They're afraid to leave the job, so they're not going to go with an early retirement because they're afraid, given family history and a number of other factors, or if they've had a setback earlier on in their career, they may say, you know, I might still have to deal with that at some point. I can't guarantee that I won't have another problem. Regardless, you should understand the rules. You certainly should, as you get closer to retirement, into your 50s, start reading a lot about things like Medicare and have your retirement medical insurance in place. Understand how it works before you leave your employer-sponsored program. If you're going to be eligible at age 65 for Medicare, well, it's going to cover a couple of parts, A and B and a few things. Well, make sure that you've talked to people about what we call supplemental health insurance, the things that will cover the difference. They call it Medigap in some cases. It's a supplemental, like a Plan 65 type of thing. There's a number of different things they call it, depending upon the company you're with. But it's what makes up for what Medicare does not pay for, including some of the co-pays and perhaps prescription health care programs. You got to know what this stuff is. This is not cheap. This is an area of your retirement expense that can surprise you badly, or greatly, shall we say, whichever word is more appropriate. But understand it up front. Why? We don't want surprises in retirement. But if you suffer from a lot of stress, for example, at work, then retiring may actually improve your health. You never know. I've seen people where that was definitely the case. In fact, almost two-thirds of retirees do cite stress as a significant motivating factor for deciding to retire, or at least to retire earlier. Retirement may also give you the extra free time to do things like healthy things, exercise, preparing, taking the time to actually prepare, shop, and prepare healthier meals than you might have done, obviously. If you've got the time, maybe you're not going to be stopping at fast food restaurants and always picking stuff up that is easy to grab, easy to eat, but certainly not necessarily good for you. And the other thing, I mean, and perhaps the most important question of all, can you actually afford to retire? I mean, all of this, ultimately, in the end, we've always talked about money here on the Money Talk program. Tonight's program has been an awful lot about how you feel about things. Finances are not the only reason to retire, but they are very, very, very important. Make an estimate of what your new lifestyle is going to cost. Figure out what it costs to be you or to be the person you want to be in retirement. You know, do the yellow pad thing. Get out the calculator. Look at your budget. Look at the way you spend money. You know, look at your the ledger on your checking account, or look at your records that you have from the credit cards if you tend to use them on an ongoing basis for expenses. Look at what you spend and figure out what an average annual budget looks like and ask yourself, am I going to want to continue spending this money in these areas the way that I've been doing it? Figure out what it costs to be you and include extra expenses for travel and for health care if appropriate. But also consider that you no longer need to save part of your income. You know, or you probably don't need to be supporting your children, I hope. Although that's not always true. You can make adjustments to your living arrangements if need be, including possibly moving into a lower cost area of the country. We know people have moved south because there was a more favorable cost of living. They didn't downsize, by the way. They didn't downgrade their quality of life. They just went into an area that was a little less expensive to achieve the same things. Count up your resources from Social Security first, a pension next, an IRA or a 401k plan after that, and wherever else you have money and sources coming from. Look at the dependable sources first, the ones you know you're going to get a monthly check, every check wired directly into your checking account, and ask yourself after you've done your budget, is this going to be enough to cover my expenses in retirement? And if it's not enough, is there enough money in your savings program, your 401k, IRAs, whatever, to make up the difference without depleting the principal in your savings plan? There are a lot of unknowns, but you should have some degree of confidence that you can pay your way through this new adventure that we're calling retirement. You're getting something back you haven't had for a long, long time, and that is, in fact, time. And, you know, retirement is not one size fits all. There's a lot of different shapes that it can take for you. Don't try to manipulate or maneuver yourself into a program that you that someone else has told you about that they think is important or appropriate. You know, not everything that your friend or your neighbor or your brother Freddie wants is appropriate and needed by you. Choose your own plan. Again, start with the necessities. Look at the resources. Do an inventory of the assets you have available. Line up all the darn soldiers and get ready for this, what could be a very exciting battle called retirement, depending upon when you started out. And understand also that once you start it, once you get into this process, give yourself a year, and at the end of the year, look back and redo all the analysis. Find out if you were right. Are the expenses what you thought they would be? Are there upcoming expenses that you're not, that could be coming that were different than that have occurred in the past? In other words, things do not always stay exactly the same. There are, from year to year, there may be differentials. There are some bills you have that are not paid monthly. Some of them paid annually. Make sure you discount them and divide them by 12 so you can assign them all monthly valuations, because a lot of your income may be coming in on a monthly basis. So make sure your expenses are factored in also on a monthly basis. Gain control, and at the end of the year, decide whether you were right or wrong about your initial plan and change it. So that means if you're going to change it, especially when it comes to your savings and investments like your 401ks, your IRAs, do not lock anything into some sort of a program that is fixed. Make sure that you have the ability to change with your retirement needs, because I promise you, the world around you is going to change even if you don't decide to yourself. You may be forced to make the changes that we're talking about. I'm Don Soa. It's all about change. That's the world of money and finance. That's what Money Talk is all about. This is AM 790, your home of talking business. Hey, folks, have a good night.